Hello and welcome to episode 48 of the Clack's Wifey podcast. We're calling this week's episode The View from the Bridge. We had the programme for government revealed this week, and which included the words that we'd all wanted to hear, IndyRef 2, now firmly on the agenda. And to celebrate, Clack's Wifeys were literally enjoying the view from a bridge, and we'll hear a bit more about that later. This week's music is royalty-free music from YouTube from Carlos Estella, which has a nice triumphant feel to it. But before we get on to our flag-waving antics, you'll remember that last week we were celebrating Jersmas Week. Well, the Tories can't let it go, can they? So we're going to start this week with a bit of fact-checking from The Ferret, which, if anybody's not aware, is non-party political journalism and also a very good fact-checking service. And you can get them on theferret.scot. It's one of the ones I contribute to with the money I'm saving on not paying a TV licence. You can also read it for free. So for Jersmas Week, The Ferret fact-checked the Tory claim that all Scots will be £2,000 worse off after independence. Let's see what they found.
Claim Scots will be £2,000 worse off after independence is unsupported.
Each year the General Expenditure and Revenue Scotland report is published, and each year the document sparks controversy. A recurring theme in recent years has been the so-called Union Dividend, which is touted by supporters of the Union as an economic positive for Scotland as part of the UK. This year was no different, with Scottish Conservative politicians such as Alistair Jack, Murdo Fraser, and Jamie Green among those claiming the GERS. Figures showed a specific financial advantage for each person from the UK. Green, an MSP for the West of Scotland, claimed that Scottish independence would cost each person £2,000. Ferret Fact Service looked at this claim and found it to be unsupported. Green's claim was one of many saying the GERS report showed a £2,000 dividend for Scots. It was repeated in the Daily Mail, Daily Express, Telegraph and Times newspaper coverage of the release. But what is the Union Dividend, and how is it calculated? The latest GERS figures showed £15.1 billion more was spent on public services than was raised in taxes in 2019-20. The figure commonly cited for the Union Dividend this year was £1,941 per person. This is the combined value of higher spending and lower revenue in Scotland compared to the UK. There was an average of £14,829 in spending per person in Scotland, while the UK average is £13,196. This means that £1,633 more is spent on public services per person in Scotland. In terms of revenue raised, including a geographical share of North Sea revenue, Scotland sits at £12,058 per person, while the UK's revenue is £12,367, which is rounded to £308 difference. Added together, this equals £1,941. This is often described as a fiscal transfer, when more money than is raised in an area is spent there by the public sector as a whole. It means that revenue generated is not tied to the area it was created. In the UK, many areas have a net fiscal deficit. Only London, the South East and East of England had a net fiscal surplus in 2019. A number of reasons have been suggested for why Scotland's spending per head is higher than the UK. These include the cost of providing public services to remote areas with lower population density and historical issues with poverty and health leave Scotland in greater need. The Scottish Government has also cited costs for services which are provided by the public sector in Scotland, but not in England, such as household water and sewerage services. Some of the spending referred to in GERS is non-identifiable, which means it is spent by the UK as whole and not necessarily in Scotland. This includes a proportion of defence spending and debt interest payments. Any figure for the fiscal transfer between the UK and Scotland is unofficial, and civil servants have warned that this is because it is impossible to provide one without making assumptions about the purpose of borrowing and spending undertaken by the UK government as a whole. Jamie Green's claim that this figure equates to an amount people would be worse off if Scotland became independent is misleading. £1,941 per person only refers to the difference in current spending per head. It does not tell us what Scotland's financial position would be after independence. GERS is a snapshot of the current position within the existing constitutional arrangements. Green's claim also states that every man, woman and child would be £2,000 worse off each year after independence, which is not supported by the GERS figures. The revenue and spending is Scotland-wide, and divided by the size of Scotland's population in order to get a per person average. It does not account for the individual circumstances of different people in Scotland. It's not possible to predict how much money emotionally independent Scotland might be able to spend in the future, and how this might compare with the amount spent per person in the rest of the UK at that time. The GERS figures do not show that if Scotland were to become independent, each person in Scotland would become £2,000 worse off. The figure only refers to the current difference between revenue and spending in Scotland compared to the UK. Ferret Fact Service, FFS, is a non-partisan fact-checker and a signatory to the International Fact-Checking Network Fact-Checker's Code of Principles. All the sources used in our checks are publicly available, and the FFS want to suggest a fact-check. Go to ideas.theferret.scot, email us at factcheck@theferret.scot or join our Facebook group.
And as you can hear, they also do audio versions of their articles, which is rather good. So that's that myth debunked. But would the Tories let it lie? No, they wouldn't. So portfolio questions this week. Kate Forbes, the finance secretary, was taking no prisoners with a wonderfully feisty response to some miserable Tory dribblings.
What its response is to the latest GERS figures.
Well, as the member will know, GERS provides estimates under the current constitutional arrangements of revenue raised in Scotland and spent for Scotland. It doesn't report on the finances of the Scottish Government, and with 40% of the spending in GERS reserved to the UK Government, along with over 70% of revenue, what GERS shows is the unsustainable nature of the UK and the need for Scotland to make its own choices.
Does the Cabinet Secretary recognise that if she had her way, Scotland's fiscal deficit would be higher than the Greek budget deficit was?
Well, I mean, having my way right now, I am obliged by law to balance the Scottish Government's budget, which we have done every year. Just a few months ago, Maurice Golden and his colleagues were complaining about the underspend in our budget, which is the byproduct of a government that by law cannot overspend. Now he's saying that there's a deficit. Which is it? Do we have an underspend or a deficit? With the levers and the resources that this government has, we balance our budget. And like every other country around the world, if we were independent, we would use all the levers at our disposal to manage our public finances in a far more sustainable way than currently being managed under this UK government.
To ask the Scottish Government whether it remains committed to publishing an alternative to the annual GERS report.
Well, frankly, over the last few months, my single focus has been balancing the budget to pay for PPE, to ensure businesses get grants and to fund public services. And as it is, I believe GERS offers one of the most persuasive arguments as to why the current constitutional arrangements are unsustainable and why the policy choices of the UK government that are allocated to the Scottish budget are the source of the challenge.
Members of this government are on record suggesting that fiscal transfers from the UK to Scotland are a sign of failure and should be stopped. But given that there have been significant fiscal transfers from Aberdeen in the North East to the Central Belt for years, with appalling funding settlements for NHS Grampian and our local authorities, does she intend to cease such transfers and ensure that the North East gets its fair share?
We continue to ensure that every part of Scotland gets the investment that they need to progress their agenda, and this year's programme for government once again ensured that that was the case. But in terms of fiscal transfers, he doesn't need to take my word for it. He can listen to his own Prime Minister, who talks about the need to level up. And he says that precisely because right now, the way that the public finances are managed right across the UK are unfair and unsustainable. So the winning argument, apparently, from the unionists is that they celebrate mediocrity, short-term thinking and unsustainability. And I think that is probably why more and more people in Scotland know that our society and our economy would be fairer and more prosperous under independence. Scottish Government what its response is to the level of deficit recorded by the latest GERS figures?
Well, as I've already said, 40% of spend, 70% of revenue, and all the major fiscal levers are reserves. So if Rachel Hamilton has any concerns about the GERS figures, I suggest she take them up with her counterparts in the UK government.
I'm sure you've all heard this clip already, but this is the part of the First Minister's programme for government where she announced the referendum, and I think it's worth preserving this for posterity.
Nevertheless, Presiding Officer, Brexit demands that we work in partnership with business, the third and public sectors to make sure that Scotland remains an attractive location for inward investment. I can therefore announce today that we will publish before the end of this year, as an accompaniment to our export strategy, a new inward investment plan with the express aim of creating 100,000 high-quality jobs over the next decade. Presiding Officer, Brexit and the way in which Brexit is being implemented immeasurably strengthens the case for Scotland becoming an independent country with the ability to shape our own destiny and contribute positively to Europe and the world. If this was a programme for government in an independent Scotland, it wouldn't have to contemplate the damage of Brexit at all. Instead, it could set out even more far-reaching plans. Plans for an immediate extension of the job retention scheme, not a plea for another government to do so. The greater use of borrowing powers to further stimulate our economy. Transformation of our national grid to support faster development of renewables. A migration system that welcomes talent at all levels and supports people to make Scotland their home. A universal basic income and a social security system geared wholly, not just partially, to lifting households out of poverty. That is why before the end of this Parliament, we will publish a draft bill setting out the proposed terms and timing of an independence referendum, as well as the proposed question that people will be asked in that referendum. And then, at next year's election, we will make the case for Scotland to become an independent country, and we will seek a clear endorsement of Scotland's right to choose our own future.
Now we're going to pop into the virtual coffee shop. This week, we started off in a bit of a, what shall we say, despite the very positive news from Holyrood, we started off in a bit of a miserable place. But the irrepressible wifeys don't stay down for long, and we soon turned it around. Here's what happened.
How can you say it's confusing the messages you're getting from different governments, because only really our government is giving out? Yeah.
All you need to know is what country do you live in? Okay, do that.
Yeah.
But if you can't cope with four different sets of information, maybe you shouldn't be a government minister.
Yeah, but it's nothing to do with that really, though, is it? No. It's to sort of feed the narrative that governments need to close. That's what that's all about.
Yeah, oh, completely. Yeah. And the whole thing about the kind of legislation that Joanna Cherry's saying about them looking about judicial reviews, etc., that's really kind of, that's just another way of them trying to remove anything that's different or in control of.
They're coming at it from all sides now.
Oh, yeah.
Priti Patel now is talking about these activist lawyers.
Yeah.
So getting everybody sort of fired up about these lawyers that are not doing their job properly when it's exactly what their job is supposed to be. So that's an attack on the you know, on the lawyers. So I'm actually really quite worried about what's going to happen in January, because come Brexit, they can do whatever the hell they like.
They're going to be too busy trying to move food around the country for a couple of months to to worry about the lawyers.
I don't think that's right. I think we're going to wake up and there's going to be a padlock on Holyrood, and New Waverley House is going to be in charge. That's what I think is going to happen, and they'll do it quickly and they'll do it overnight, because the narrative is coming from every single one of them that any kind of opposition is being ridiculed.
Yeah.
And that's what they're going to do.
I am
really worried about the situation.
The purpose of all this complete tsunami of utter bollocks.
Yeah.
This is absolutely deliberate. Create a huge load of confusion, including about COVID. So nobody believes anything anymore. So meanwhile, they go and sneak this in. So the last thing any of us should be doing, putting all this stuff up publicly and all that rubbish, because all you're doing is a job for them.
Mm.
And really, Scott commented on this as well, because he follows, I've stopped following America. Biden's doing exactly what the bloody Democrats did. Trump's going to get in. This is pertinent to Scotland, because exactly that's what's going on in England. Look at Keir Starmer, absolute rubbish. The same is going to happen here. We're not immune.
Yeah,
you're right, Anne. This is exactly recognizing what they're doing and why, and we shouldn't be, you know, not we should not be responding to it. Mm. We should have been on the putting out our own message first, but that's none of our jobs, is it? It's the government, you know, it's our government to do that.
If like Anne says, we wake up on the 1st of January, find that Holyrood's padlocked, the New Waverley House is taken over, without COVID, there would have been people out on the streets.
Yeah.
But because of COVID, I still think there will be people out on the streets.
I think we have to go out on the streets if that happens. We're going to have to grab the saltire, get to Edinburgh and close down all the roads we can, socially distancing whilst wearing masks. But we can't let them do that.
Democracy is so fragile.
Mm.
It's always been fragile. And if you look at the past, the Hitler, the rise of the Nazis, this government in Westminster, it's 3/4 of the way there. As you already said, that this was a 10-year parliament. I've been talking about this. I actually went through, before I was in Facebook jail, I went through all my past things on Twitter, on Facebook, and I've been talking about this for about 10 years. The first post that I could find was 2010, and everybody said to me, don't be so stupid. Don't be so stupid. You can't call them Nazis. You can't call them fascists.
That's what they are.
But they are. They're following the Nazis 101.
Yeah.
And having a go at the judicial system is exactly what the Nazis did.
Check. Until it happens, nobody sees that it's going to happen.
It's actually happening,
But it's already happening. Of insight.
Following that logic, then, what's the next step? Because if we can get on the front foot, instead of just watching it happen and saying, oh, that's following a path, what is the next step?
Is it normalisation, Fiona? That's the thing. Nobody believes you. You know, the whole thing about the attacking the disabled, you know, the whole thing about the benefit sanctions. What they've actually done is they've created a system of concentration camps in your own home. That is what I've done. That's the situation we're in now. I've been for about 5 or 6 years that people are dying of starvation in their own homes.
But it's normal, you know, and they've normalised it in the public.
Well, it wasn't normal 10 years ago, but we let it happen.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
But they've normalised it. They've normalised racism. They've normalised lying. They've normalised killing your own people.
But if you said that, Tracy, if you said that, I mean, I'm sick, fed up saying it. I said it on Twitter, I said it on Facebook, I said it face-to-face with friends. And when you say that to people, this is what they're doing. They say, don't be daft. Of course they're not doing that. I mean, I've still got a colleague. We have a tea break every day. And every day he calls me the messenger of doom, because I'm always talking about something that's going on. And he keeps saying, I don't want to live in your world where these things are happening. And I'm going, Alex, but they are happening. They're happening now. Don't want to know.
Because they normalise different.
He said, I don't want to live in your world. What they've done is create another world. Yeah, we do have to all be on the streets, but we're going to be portrayed exactly like this bunch of nutters in London.
this week. Mm. We're going to be portrayed. Look what's happening in America. Both sides are being portrayed the same as each other now. There's no, you know, so just kind of piling on and doing more shouting and protesting. It's just going to be all as bad as each other. And it's going to be your friend, Anne. You know, stop portraying doom and gloom. I'm much happier, red pill or blue pill. So it's more comfortable here because none of this affects me. Saying it's a lot deeper.
So what do we do then? What is our next action if that is the case?
I think this is why we need the face-to-face. Let's drill down and what does this, how do you reach the people that this is never going to reach because it's not in their... We've been politicking away and now we're on such different wavelengths than, you know, we're in a gulf between probably the average person looking at or not looking at what's going on, which was the whole intention. I know, that's what everybody always says. Well, what do we do then?
I think, though, one of the most powerful things, actually, that has worked in our favour is the whole Nicola Sturgeon COVID thing. Because that's the thing that's actually moved us from less than 50 to more than 50. And it has nothing to do with independence per se, but it has to do with what affects me. So COVID is affecting everybody, and you're getting this daily message which is coherent and it's consistent. And that is what's changing people's minds. And I don't think actually we can do anything else, because that's something that's happening irregardless of the independence message. And I think that's correct, because I think those people that you need to convince now wouldn't listen to it if you couched it in terms of independence.
Yes.
They have to reach it by another path. So the way that they reach it is by what Nicola Sturgeon is doing, you know, sort of going high when everybody else goes low. It is the way that you reach them.
Well, what she is doing is very, very clearly everything you do affects everybody else, and everything everybody else does affects you. We are all in this together. Now, isn't that what indie's all about? You don't even need the indie words.
And the interesting thing is, though, if you follow Twitter and things like that, that the people who are sort of dyed-in-the-wool independent Easters, whatever you want to call them, are getting frustrated because they're not talking about independence, they're talking about COVID. But actually, COVID is the thing that's changing people's minds. Independence doesn't matter. COVID is going to change people's minds. Yeah,
COVID. Every single one of us matters.
Yeah.
COVID's the catalyst, isn't it?
Yeah.
You decide to go down the road shouting and screaming about, oh, the Parliament's not getting this power, it's not getting that power. You'll get a rift of Westminster turning it to being, you are the enemy of the people.
Well, I do that all the time, you know.
Yeah, I know. But then it's getting more and more normalised that, you know, oh, the climate protesters, the enemy is of the people. They're on the terrorist list. Find that we were on that sort of thing as well. Because we weren't shouting about the state.
No doubt that MI5 has a folder that thick on each of us. I have absolutely no doubt about it. Just because we're even having this Zoom meeting, I have no doubt that they have a folder on us.
Well, they only will if we're saying anything that makes sense, because you can be sure they've spent thousands on all their psycho-ops and all their research, and we've spent, as in we, as in the whole movement, has really spent bugger all in studying. And I've only in the last couple of years started the first time in my life looking at voter psychology. And my God, I've got a lot of catching up to do.
But the thing is that once you see it, it's fairly obvious. You know, once you see somebody trying to sort of control the narrative, you can see it a mile off.
Yeah.
Once you have that little bit of understanding about psychology, you start seeing it in people of power. And you start seeing the narcissist, I can't say the word. You just start seeing the whole sort of like cycles develop. It's just because I did psychology last year, I'm starting to go, oh, hang on a minute. That links to that. That links to that. And it is actually quite scary, especially the people in power.
But calling it out, though, when you see it, once you've seen it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
So it's how do we get people to see it then?
Yeah.
But you need them to be interested in the first place. You need them engaged.
Yeah.
But that takes you back to how does this impact on me? Because that's always everybody's starting point. And this brings in the sort of, okay, there's a whole load of things that we value about our lives that are under threat at the moment. And focusing on what the threat is and where's the safe space and where's the threatening space. I mean, our safe space is we've got a First Minister who appears to be acting for the benefit of us. And therefore, that builds up trust in whatever path she wants to take. Whereas you look over the wall and you think they are acting in the interest of rich disaster capitalists and everybody else's collateral damage. So highlighting that sort of increases the, right, I want to stay away from that. I want to move towards this more trustworthy space. And actually, that's got nothing to do with the I word either, although independence is what allows us to, that's our protection from what's going on down the road.
One of the things I noticed is people were shouting about shutting the border. Now, I don't know technically how possible that would have been, whether we were been an independent country or whatever, but people were going, shut the border, and then they're going, hang on a minute, we can't do that because we don't own the rights to shut the border. That was a big point for many people as well.
Yeah. I think you're right, but do you know what we could do, though?
I find that interesting because Wales seem to manage to turn people back. I thought that was quite interesting. But what I also thought was interesting was, no, we couldn't shut the border, but what we did have in place at that point was a five-mile travel restriction.
Yeah.
So I don't know why Police Scotland just didn't sit 5 miles north of the border and just wait.
We shut the border for foot and mouth.
Foot and mouth,
so you can shut it for public health. What I would be inclined to do is, okay, we can't say, right, England's got terrible infection rates, we're closing the border for all the political reasons. But if we said, actually, our infection rates are going up a little bit in pockets, we want to protect the rest of the UK, so we're going to shut the border from our half. Once it's there, you know, once that border's there, it's there.
If only... But none of us has got any control over that. I suppose we could write individually.
That's the thing that's worrying is the seeing things, seeing how it's playing out. Neil makes all his predictions as well, which are usually terrifyingly accurate, and thinking, I have no control over this or very little control over this. Because even if we're talking about the Holyrood elections next year, even if we have an SNP majority, that's not until May.
I know.
We've had from January till May for them to drive people down and down in the spiral of everything that's been happening.
But we've also had from January when we know, I mean, there was something in the paper today about the haulage firms and food producers are up in arms because the government's missed the deadline for giving them proper guidance about food labelling. So the fact they've not got custom officials employed or trained, they've not got this car park built, they've not got the paperwork sorted out. So food moving in and out of Dover is going to shut down in January, and it could be months before it's back up again. Now, okay, there's contingency plans you can put in place and you can bring things in other ways, but that is going to impact on all of us. We're all going to notice that. So all the things that we've learned through the panic buying with the COVID.
It's another abstract, I guess.
Well, eating's not abstract, though. We've all got to eat.
I've just thought of another thing we could actually do in the meantime, which I know a lot of us are already doing, because I know I'm not the only one that had a Brexit stock from last year and is slowly rebuilding it. But if we, you know, we can get some long sell-by-the-date things and do a little, because the food banks aren't going to be able to cope. If those of us with space to do that, could we be ready, you know, here in places like that? But if there are food shortages, which there probably will be, at least we preempted that for people that aren't able to stockpile.
Or we could, the other thing we could do is start sharing, well, what are we stockpiling? Make that the reality.
Yeah, but just don't share your addresses, because you'll have people outside your house with it, you know.
I think nobody about your stockpile. Nothing. I'm collecting nothing.
That's what you're telling me.
Okay, I'm telling you not.
If you look at the way that regimes crumble, there's rumbling and rumbling and rumbling and rumbling, and then it actually happens very quickly. And I think what you're talking about you know, the food not being able to get through and the problems with the, you know, the cross-channel crossing and whatnot, I think that's going to be a pivotal moment, because if there are starving people in England, they will all point their anger south.
Yes.
And if 50 million or 60 million people are pointing their anger towards Westminster, that might be an opportunity for Scotland to go its own way, just because the whole thing is just a house of cards.
And Leslie Riddick have proposed that, OK, 1st of January, it all falls apart. But 2nd of January, the UK is no longer a member state in any way. There's nothing to stop the EU sending a letter to Edinburgh saying, OK, what you want to do now, we'll support you.
And I think with all the kind of sort of backroom negotiations that were going on, because they were never away from Brussels right from the moment of the announcement of the Brexit referendum, I think all of that is in place just waiting to go.
I think so. I think so.
You know those puzzles that are sliding ones?
Yeah, that's what it's like.
They've just got to do... They're waiting for that one to move, but before they get that one moved, they've got to move all other ones down here. So we're in the middle of moving all these ones down here, and then all of a sudden that one's going to go, and then the picture's going to come out.
I think you're absolutely right. The other thing that really heartened me this week, there's the Business for Scotland polling. 63% of Scots think that it'll be a yes vote. That must include people who aren't yet ready to vote yes. That if that's becoming the prevailing wisdom, they're expecting a yes vote. And you can see the dialogue slightly shifting from you can't have a referendum because to what, I mean, Carwyn Jones this week, what would happen to Wales if Scotland do become independent? We've got to then worry about our border and what we're going to be called and what's our flag going to look like. Now, you can say these are all stupid questions, but the fact is he's asking questions about a future state that he can now imagine happening, whereas 6 months ago, nobody was imagining it could happen. They were still saying, you've not got to 50% yet, it'll never happen, Boris can say no. Well, as soon as people stop thinking, can you do it, and start thinking, how's it going to work, you've massively shifted from something that, you know, you couldn't imagine to something you're now planning for.
It's interesting as well, though, that they're talking about, you know, she's seeing people saying, well, it'll need to be 60 or 70% that vote for it. So again, you're like, well, why? Brexit was only 52. Do you suddenly get to change the rules? And again, if they do things like that, your ordinary people that are maybe not quite so engaged with it, well, then they will see things like that and go, well, how is that fair? You got to get Brexit by a skin of the teeth vote.
But even that's a shift from you can't have one at all, it's out of the question, to, OK, how are we going to count the results? That's moved from something that can't happen to something that we're now negotiating the details.
Yeah, like all the Scots from all over the world being able to...
What I think is going to happen between now and the end of this parliamentary term, they're going to have a paper setting out the date and the details and the question and everything else. I think they're begging the UK government to take them to court over it. And then you've got the whole population of Scotland watching the UK government trying to take us to court to prevent us having a say on our own future.
But won't they just do what they did before and sort of try and slow down the legislation and then change it?
I was just thinking, isn't it brilliant that we've managed throughout this 6 month period to keep that kind of contact going between us? I think we've done remarkably well. And I was just wondering, though, with the First Minister's kind of subtly starting the pistol, we could have a go at doing the Monday monthly meeting by Zoom. Do you think that would be worth trying? Because actually, now that we've got an indication that something's happening, albeit we're quite limited in what we can get out and do, there are things we could start doing again, and a bit of planning maybe.
Well, we're talking, we've still never got around to doing a Bridges for Indy thing, which is something that we can do that's fairly easy. It's outdoors, it's...
And stones, letters, sorry, only go on.
Yes, I was just going to say, forget sitting in the, let's just go and do Bridges for Indy for a quick hi, how are you? Bridges for Indy is wonderful. You only need two of you. I'd say don't do it on your own, but you only need two. You don't need loads. The first time I went and did one, I thought I was about to go, I feel like a total fanny. Oh my God, am I really going to do this? It is really, really uplifting. It really is.
Glad you were there, Anne, because I got extra gloves. It's the bridge over the 876.
Yeah, the two bridges meet and you head out towards the motorway. It's ideal because you can park at the bottom. There's no traffic. It's a cycle.
There used to be like a wee kind of cafe thing there. I think it was at the Pine and Oak or something.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You park in at that bit there and you just then walk back up onto the bridge and you're on the bridge, as Anne says. It's coming off the motorway or from air, or it's the other way. Oh. It's like Manningshire and Kincardine Bridge. You know, they come down to that Higgins Newt roundabout.
Yeah.
So it's quite a busy spot. You've got lots of traffic from different directions.
I'm up for that. Should we pick a date and just do it?
I've always done them on Saturdays, and there's been enough traffic about on the Saturday.
You want a lot of lorries because the lorry honks are really, really, really gee up.
I was going on my phone there to look at, see what the weather was like.
Oh,
this
good
weekend.
Thinking. Well, why don't we go for tomorrow and just see how we get on?
Tomorrow morning? I could do tomorrow morning sometime. Not too early.
We don't need loads of people on it.
As Anne says, you don't need many there. Three flags on the bridge is enough for people to see that and do all the tooting and waving. And it is, it's really quite uplifting because, you get the occasional Vickies and things like this. But most people toot and wave and cheer and, it's much better.
11?
Do 11? Early.
No, it's fine. And then what we're talking about, an hour or so, aren't we? We're not talking...
You're not going to be there more than a couple of hours, to be honest, because I'm in light outdoor person, but standing in one place for 2 hours is a bit much.
Yeah. So, and what equipment do we need then?
You need to make sure you secure flags if you've got them on poles. We should just be standing there with our salt
holding
tanks.
Them.
I've got some fold-up chairs as well, because as I say, it gets a bit much just standing.
Sometimes I've got cable ties. We will put cable ties to cable tie the flagpoles onto the bridge, but they can just be detached at the end. It just means it's secure and there's no risk of anybody or of anything like falling over into the traffic.
And do we need anything other than just a couple of salt tires and some chairs and maybe a flask?
That's it.
Okay.
Just gloves, socks and hat for the cold extremities if you're like me.
Right.
Two jumpers.
Actually, that bridge we're going to, because it's a bridge that's not walked, the only vehicles you'll get going over it are farm vehicles. It's not a road that public can access. It links the farmer's field on one side of the road to the farmer's field on the other side of the road. So from the point of view of kind of a risk assessment, that one wouldn't be too bad. 11 till 12:30. And if we get there and if at 12:30 is still going great guns and we want to stay, there's nothing to stop us staying on a bit longer. You don't have to be there at the start. You can get there at 12, come at 12 for half an hour. I think once you've done one and you see what it makes you feel like when you hear all the cars peeping positively, they might be peeping angrily, but I always assume they're peeping positively.
Well, you'd think 55% of them are being positive now, wouldn't you?
Unless it's really, really obvious, the vast majority are positive responses and you get a lot of responses as well.
Great, let's do it then. I'll pop that up on the group and 11 till 12:30 and we'll just see how it goes.
And so, just like that, the plan was hatched. Saturday morning dawned bright and clear. Bit of a wind, beautiful weather for flags. I checked in with Indie Live Radio, as I do most mornings, Had a bit of a chat with James E as he got ready for his show. Gathered my flag, brewed myself a flask of coffee, and set off. And how lovely to get a bit of a shout out from the James E show on Indie Live Radio as I ran out the door. Also nice that he mentioned the Indie Live Radio newsletter for August, which I wrote. And if you want to get hold of that, James is just about to tell you how.
Just also wanted to mention that if you go to indielive.radios and you go all the way down to the bottom of the first page there, you can sign up to get our very, very good newsletter that comes out every month. The August newsletter came out last week and it's available for you to get sent to you by email, and it gives you news on what's happening here at Indie Live Radio in relation to various shows, various presenters, etc. And also Fiona McGee is heading off to a Bridges for Indie event this morning, and she will be going to, here we go, it's the bridge on the A876 near the Clackmannanshire Bridge, and they'll be there between 11 and 12:30 this afternoon. So if you're passing by the bridge on the A876 near the Clackmannanshire Bridge, give them a wee honk of the horn, give them a wave. They are putting on their event there today.
Right, so we're in the car park of the Pine and Oak. There's a little coffee van there and we're gathering. We're just ready to go up onto the bridge when another couple of the wifeys arrive. And when Lorraine told the guy what we were doing, he sent us over some cakes for free, which is lovely. So thank you very much from the snack bar.
Gastro Grill.
No, so we've got a beautiful day for it, actually. The flags are flying nicely. I like those.
The disabled folk can do it because I can do it. It's sitting on the bloody chair.
And you can distance as well. Right, I need to get these.
I've got the Velcro.
Next thing you know, we're up on the bridge. Quite a few cyclists around, very interested in what we're doing. So here's a little bit of reportage from our roving reporter, Anne.
Morning, would you like to do anything for the podcast? It's for Indie Live Radio. Just to say something about what you're doing, you know, why you're here.
Well, we're actually just cycling, but I'm very much for yes. Think Scotland's an intelligent country and can look after its own affairs.
Fabulous, thank you. Thank you. Would you like to say something?
Yeah, this is probably about my third or fourth Bridges event, and it's really good coming along. It's a real boost because all the vehicles go underneath and toot and people wave to you. Just lets you know that the mood has definitely changed in Scotland with how people are feeling towards being independent and being able to control their own finances, how the country operates, their justice system, which we control already, but just being able to decide what we want to do and not being controlled by Westminster.
Thanks very much.
Very well.
So you're on the bridge this morning. What is it that influences you to do these bridges for Indy?
Especially now during the pandemic, with social distancing being easily achieved on a bridge, and I'm disabled, so I'm able to just sit here in my wheelchair and participate, so I just feel like I'm able to get involved.
And what do you get out of it?
I get camaraderie and heat through the cars, really buoys your spirits up. It's a great feeling knowing that we're winning now, and you can hear it by the response with people passing by.
Thank you. So we're on the bridge here at Higgins Nuke. So why is it that you come and do Bridges for Indy?
Just want to chat to the public and see them get their spirits up, and it clearly is getting their spirits up because we get loads of reactions. Really positive, lots of lorries there, yeah, there's one, another one.
Thank you very much. So I'm just here on the bridge here, and I'm just wondering why it is that you do Bridges for Indy.
Well, because it lets everybody see that the sport's still out there, absolutely, and we're getting a bigger response today than I think we've ever had. So really, honestly, the sport for independence has still been able to make its own choices, its own decisions, with its own revenues. Time is coming.
Fabulous. Thank you. So what do you think the future holds for Scotland then?
oh, well, the key to the door is independence. We can make it whatever we want, but the, whatever it becomes, it'll be something we've chosen.
Thank you.
As opposed to the country next door.
I still think they're going to shut us in January. Not to the end of the story, but it just makes it harder, you know?
As well, yeah, but think of how that plays to the rest of the world.
The way the world's going, it doesn't matter. Does that look wrong?
That was our adventure for this week, and I have to say I loved being up on that bridge. I'd not done it before, so I didn't really have anything to gauge it against, but everybody else who was seasoned bridge goers said that the amount of peeps and waves and everything that we got today was just unparalleled compared to anything they've had in the past. And it certainly seemed that we were getting some fantastic support. And I think as well, because we're not in Glasgow or Edinburgh, the big cities, you know, we're in the boondocks in Clackmannanshire, it's good to show them that it doesn't matter where you go in Scotland, there's something happening. And just looking on Facebook, there was a lot of other bridge events that weekend. So it's like we're all gearing up, we're all getting out there, and we're all looking to see what can we do. We also had a contact from Carolyn, who's in Renfrew Women for Indy, and Carolyn's a good friend of the show, and we send greetings to Carolyn and all the Renfrew Women for Indy. Carolyn's suggestion was that we should interview some of the women who are being selected for standing for the Holyrood elections, and I think that's a great idea. And I'm actually going to have a chat with Valerie and Marlene, who do the daytime show on Indie Live Radio, because that's something they might be interested in rather than just do it on our podcast. So it could actually be a whole series. So we'll have a chat to them. But thank you very much for the suggestion, Carolyn. Lovely to hear from you. So if anybody is going through that selection process just now, whatever party you're in, we're not party political, then give us a shout, and if possible, we'll see if we can get you a spot on the radio and you can have a go with some friendly media before you hit the streets and see what the other lot are like. You can contact us through our Facebook page, Clackmannanshire Women for Independence, or our Twitter, which is @clackswifey, or you can email me if you want at fiona@indielive.radio, and we'd love to hear from you. So that's about it for this week. As ever, thank you very much for listening, and we look forward to talking to you again next time. Bye now.
In life, dog.